It's 12:30 here in the town that time forgot, and time as usual for Bureaucracy Now. And I am joined by my co-host, mainly my host, John Morrow. John, thanks for joining in again today.
Hey, Taylor, you could set your clock to this show. I mean, this is how we define time in my little universe.
12:30. It's got to happen right at 12:30.
Thank you. And, yeah, thanks for giving me something to look forward to.
And the log builder leaves us, you know, she times it out, so it comes up at 12:30, you know, and it's one of the fun things about doing the offline programming, the scheduling for the station is getting it all on. John, we have no guest. It's just the two of us. So
I'm sorry to disappoint everybody, but it's just me. We had people like Barb Traylor and Emma Bolin and just dynamos with us the last few weeks. So we're just going to catch our breath here and focus on just a quaint conversation about how the city's working.
Well, and I've kind of wanted to do that for a while anyway. I did enjoy having Emma and Barb on, and I wanted to acknowledge that, you know, Barb talking about, you know, burnout and work-life balance and the effort that you're putting in to just sort of the management of the staff from the top down with this vision that, you know, you have to have a life in addition to having a job. And I think
I remind that to Emma a lot, even though she's only 3 months into the role, because boy, she like, you know, a lot of people I have the honor to work with, just off like a rocket. I mean, there's just so much on her plate, and she's just cutting through it with real grace. And there's some pretty exciting possibility here, particularly on the housing front. So that's something to watch. We'll have her back here to talk more about that.
Well, we had a little report at the top of the hour on our news of about the under the tent meeting for ADUs. Yeah. Did you attend also?
I was just coming down with COVID at the time, so I did not go. Sorry to disclose that to everybody.
Well, I wasn't. Now that you've
let me, I'm on the mend.
Yeah, I'm glad. Yeah, you look good. I'm glad to know you're taking easy and not in the office.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing what a lot of coughing does for your ab muscles. lots of respect for those who have endured COVID and coughed their way through it. I think I'm kind of clear through, but out of courtesy, you know, I'll wait till the full 10 days and make sure that I don't put anybody in danger. But, you know, you could actually do a lot of my job connected with your ear to the phone and on a computer most of the day, which is how I started my day. And I still really haven't gotten up. So, so I missed that. I know that Mayor Faber and Emma both spoke to some work that we're doing. I was pleased to see that there are well over 100 people there.
Yeah.
I know Dave Nakagawara, who is our building official, was also there, and he's a treasure trove of information and expertise. And it was really great to see all the other organizations, planning departments, agencies, East Jefferson, county, many others at the table. So I was sorry to miss that one.
It is going to take a village to solve this problem, and it's interesting to see the public, you know, the public and the nonprofit alliance people getting together, and it's ultimately going to take private enterprise. People are going to have to build units and
Well, look, we put our RFQ went out. I think it was yesterday, so it's in the paper. We actually have a new little webpage that popped up on Evans Vista. And you can go and look at it. So that's really for the master planning and process that we're going out to bid for now, getting requests for qualifications, because there's a lot of work we need to do there and get it development ready, and a lot of engagement that we want to do to make sure that the vision matches the vision that this community has for it. So we don't have specific events and opportunities lined up yet, but we will. And so we are very eager to get people involved in that project.
So tell me about the scope of this RFQ. Is this, if you can, is this about preparing the ground or putting in infrastructure or doing the planning? What does it look like?
It's kind of a little bit of everything, to be honest. So, we're anticipating proposals that take on things like entitlements and kind of getting things property ready, the property development ready, and really focusing on mixed income workforce housing. But, you know, it includes things like master planning, site plans, financial analysis, the mix and type of housing, the design guidelines, infrastructure planning, wetland delineation. There's a ton of things that that takes into account that is very technical in nature. And we do have staff on team who are going to be interfacing with that and who could actually do that stuff really well.
Well, I was just, my question is, you're actually looking to, because some of these are things that I would expect that, you know, city planning staff would do, but it's a big project. So
it is.
So you're looking to sort of outsource some of that.
That's correct. And really because we've, you know, the team's been really savvy about attracting both enthusiasm, attention, and funding from other agencies. And, you know, we went to, Emma and I went to the Board of County Commissioners mm-hmm. with our hat in our hand saying, look, you know, we could use some support to get this project moving faster than our current staff could carry. And they agreed. And that's where, you know, some of this resource is coming from, is actually from Jefferson County. So
is that going to be my next question? When you say resource, you mean funding?
Yeah, we went and asked for $500,000 worth of funding for this with a clear plan for how to use it. I just listed a number of technical elements, but the big piece I think those listening might want to pay attention to is the public engagement side of that. We want to really put that at the top and make sure it's very there are ample opportunities. And of course, it pairs well with the funding that we received from the state to purchase the property and the funding we anticipate from the federal government to build the sewer infrastructure. So
right, and it's the sewer it's the key piece, right? Can't go anywhere.
It enables that property and actually a lot of that area. So yeah, I just want to make sure it doesn't go radio silent because you know we're still really working away at it, and there's going to be a lot more public visibility when there's a chance for the public to weigh in on what it should look and feel like.
Yeah, okay. I'm glad you brought it up in the sense that, you know, I quickly asked you about the ADU meeting and you pivoted from there to the Evans Vista, as I believe you did last week too. And
yeah, well, I mean, I'm a big fan of ADUs too, and there's a lot we could do there. And so I was encouraged to hear that conversation secondhand about new opportunities around increasing, you know, the role of the ADU and frankly, you know, pre-approved plans, not just ADUs. I mean, you know, cottage housing and smaller houses and some.
Right.
You know, the puzzle we're trying to uncrack is really this missing middle. I mean, all of the housing matters, you know, right from, you know, emergency through transition, affordable, you know, up to market rate. But the hard one to finance, the hard one to understand and to move forward is really that missing middle piece and how to get that kind of density where you might be able to put a number of structures in a place that a single family home would normally be. We want to look at our code and make sure that we can find some creative ways of making that happen. So that's very squarely on the radar right now. It has to do with ADUs, but it actually has to do with more than just ADUs.
Right. And it also has to do with tiny houses and maybe co-housing and sharing that. And that certainly addresses, you know, a wider range of, when I call it lifestyle choices, then, you know, sort of your, you know, I mean, I always think in terms of your typical gray-haired retiree, I'm guilty, and and what I might want, but, you know, then, you know, all you have to do is look at other people who are coming to town and say, well, what might they want? And there's different housing for different people with different needs. So I'm glad. So is this something that when you say looking at code, is this something that's going to get turned over to Planning Commission to look at? I keep asking.
There'll be elements. I mean, boy, our lovely Planning Commission already choose through a lot of work.
I know.
And so they're already looking at elements, including parking requirements and things that relate to ADUs. You know, there's a number of things on their docket. Almost everything of a substantive code-based nature will have to come through the Planning Commission. The challenge is, you know, we have a this is a terrible analogy, but I was just talking with somebody about the water line. It's only so wide. You know, you can only force so much stuff
water
through it, so much pressure. And so we're having to make decisions this year and particularly into next year about what we take on and cram through that line to get the most stuff through.
The flow.
If you take the wrong sized object that might not make sense to shove through that line first, it can kind of stuff things up. So we're just trying to get the flow right.
This is the flow restrictor analogy. Yeah. Yeah. No, you're
just
right.
Just mixed a ton of metaphors.
No, no. If you stick something big in there and you can't, and then nothing comes out of the planning commission for a while.
Don't put an elephant in the pipeline. I think that's the upshot.
Yeah. The elephant in the, you're mixing metaphors again. I'm blaming the COVID, John. I wanted to touch on something, couple things that you know that I've lost track of, and if I've lost track of them, I think maybe the general listener has, although certainly not our attentive listeners. And I think we have both to bureaucracy now, but I know
it could be that I've lost track of it, Taylor, and then we're really in trouble.
Well, yeah, no, I don't think so. So I know the city council voted to extend through some period the downtown streeteries, but a fairly short period. It's the end of the summer.
Yeah.
It's pretty coming up pretty soon.
I recall correctly, that's through December 31st of this year. And then the downtown streeteries will need to be removed. That is not true with uptown and the rest of the city.
Okay. And the reconsideration of streeteries is dependent on a parking plan.
So, yeah, that's correct.
So where
I love this is like 20 questions now. Yeah. So yes.
So where is the parking plan sitting now?
Yeah. Well, it is sitting in our draft strategic work plan for 2023.
Okay.
And you know, I've sidled my way into a number of parking plans in former roles, both with Auckland and with Seattle. And I'm up for a good parking conversation. It's a good way to get everybody on the same side of having strong opinions about.
Well,
something.
I was just going to say this is it's like the internet bike shed analogy. Everybody wants to argue about the color. Parking is something everybody has an opinion on. By the way, a question just popped in. Do you want to take a question?
Yeah, let's do a question. I was just going to say maybe to finish up on parking.
Oh, yeah.
Since it's about parking.
It is.
I was just going to say is something we are scheduling for 2023. It's a big policy lift, and there are some dependencies.
Uh-huh.
So I'm eager to dive into that. We need to make sure we have both resources and staffing to do so well, because we don't want to open up a conversation we can't follow through on. So we're in the process right now of pairing our work plan with our budget, and that process is happening at city council.
Because it costs money to come up with a parking plan. It costs money for the outreach and the meetings and the people to write the documents, and this stuff is not free.
No, it's not free, and we want to do it well. I mean, you know, I'm at the risk of offending a vast number of people all at once. You know, if we took the approach with Sims Gateway and just made a decision, or a port or PUD made a decision without consultation, a stakeholder group, advisory body engagement, city council action,
then things
who could be comfortable with that, even if it was the right answer?
Yeah, so absolutely.
Same thing with parking. We want to make sure we get the engagement right. And frankly, we need the technical staff in place. And the one thing, I'll just be overt about my worry. If we don't have a city engineer seated and in place, or somebody of a technical expertise to help guide that conversation, we probably can't do it very well. So there's also a staff dependency to make sure that we have the capable hands to carry the project.
Okay. Ready for the question? It's a good one.
Oh, good, good. I can't wait.
I'm not sure. I mean, I'll ask the question, but it's one of those. I'll just read it. It says, since most workers would choose to own their own homes instead of rent, and since the city already has infrastructure for water, sewer, power, and roads, is the city willing to reduce the size of lots allowable to build from 10,000 minimum to 5,000 or even 2,500?
Yeah. So
obviously not your choice personally, but.
Yeah, well, we're not limited to 10,000, and there are some flexible arrangements if you do a planned unit development. So I don't want to go right down into a wonky response, because I'll soon lose my own ground here. But to get to the spirit of that question, those are the exact kinds of things that need to be cracked open to see if there is an opportunity. Because I would argue in other communities, looking at lot sizes is a good way of trying to make space for density in ways that also match the community look and feel, design guidelines and make sure we don't get, terrible development. But it is a way of fitting people in where the infrastructure is. And from a pure infrastructure point of view, it makes sense.
It does.
Density isn't a word we tend to use that much anymore, but a congregation of people in an area adds not just, social value and some excitement and some energy. It takes It takes fewer people to pay for the infrastructure needed to get water and sewer and streets, connected up and running. So,
We're sharing that infrastructure across a greater number
exactly.
of taxable lots and of people to pay the taxes on those lots. Is
Exactly.
that what you mean by that?
And right now, I mean, I won't argue that all of our infrastructure is in good shape because some of it's not. But we have, 84, 85 miles of road the city's responsible for in our 7 square mile town. That's quite a large number for a tax base of only about 10,000 people. So we don't want to continue to stretch further out with our infrastructure and put more burden of cost on everybody. If we could actually get more efficient use of space and infrastructure and possibly some better outcomes for livability for people, it means maybe better transit service or more investment in local parks or more people walking into your bakery or brewery. And I don't think that's a bad thing.
No. So I think the answer to the question sounds like yes, the city would be willing to
Provisional, yes. Yeah,
would be
that's
willing to consider it, but
yes.
that would be amongst the array of options that you would be looking at, and not just ADUs, but the idea of, well, I think when you talked about smaller houses, and and maybe more than one on a lot, but certainly smaller lots. So yeah.
And different typologies. I mean, I think, there's some belief historically in how the West was built, really, on sort of single family model. But anybody who's lived in a larger community realizes that that kind of quickly doesn't pencil out. And there are elegant ways of creating space that aren't the typical single family model that can make sense, even in a place like Port Townsend.
Well, I'm going to say thank you for the question. I thought that was a good question,
Yeah,
and
I appreciated that
I
too.
appreciate that. And so if you have a question, we are here, dj@kptz.org. I'll remind folks, if you're just joining us, you're listening to our weekly edition of Bureaucracy Now! It's our chance to get together with Port Townsend City Manager John Morrow and talk about all things Port Townsend. And November, I think, is coming up here. It's a budgeting month for you, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of budgeting months, but this is the pointy end of it. Yes.
What kinds of things are happening there, and how does it look?
Oh, good question. It's you might have got the note that I was just on the phone with our finance director for a meeting
Oh,
previous
I
this
did get
month.
that note.
Yeah,
Yes.
so she's just hard at work with her team, grinding out the technical detail. But look, for the general public, we've come to city council just this week with a general sense of where we expect our revenue to be. So that kind of sets the bar for what's possible.
Right.
We also came with initial department requests. So we, as department directors, got together. We've been hashing out, okay, what can we conceivably afford? What are our priorities? How do we work together? How do we do things smarter and differently? That came to council as a presentation on Monday night. And there are a couple of interesting takeaways that maybe I'll just park for now, but if you want to come back to, we can unpack it a little bit. And then on Monday coming up, we'll have a workshop with council about the budget. So basically November, like you, or sorry, October, kind of like you're saying, is our chance to work from, okay, we did our work plan in June or July. That was a process we reconfigured when I came here because I thought we should probably do what do we want to do and then how do we fund it instead of, hey, we did our budget, now what can we do? I think that makes more
It
sense.
does.
And so we're going to, on Monday, actually walk through a little bit of our work plan at a workshop and then how our budget pairs to deliver on that work plan. And that's where some of the questions you had before, like about parking, will come out. So it's a workshop. The public are welcome to attend, to comment, to follow along. But over the course of this month, we'll get to what we need to do by November, which is to balance the budget. And then we'll go through iterations of draft budgets to council that can, we'll have public hearings, we'll have a chance for people to weigh in. And the aim is always to adopt it by December.
So you got your work cut out for you in the next in the next
Well,
6 weeks or so. I
yeah, I
mean,
mean,
this isn't the sexy stuff, but this is the hard, this is
no,
the
it's shared pain. And I think it's a good point to, I mean, I want the community to understand this. you know, if we all went in for ourselves, and I'm just thinking about the city right now, okay? So just if all department directors said, I only care about the police budget or public works or city attorney or, you know, planning, boy, this would be really hard. And it already is really hard. But what I'm really grateful for is I have a group of individuals who are working together to figure out a common challenge, because it's not just a who can posture and who gets the most sway and gets lucky with the numbers or gets the numbers assigned to them by the city manager. This is a collective action problem. And so we sit around the table, we've been doing this for months already. How are we going to solve this puzzle? Because we want to do a lot more than what we can fund.
Right.
How do we find new ways, more efficient ways, creative ways, strategic ways of actually getting the ball moving forward? And it's been a set of challenging conversations, but top marks to department directors for holding that level of ambiguity and kind of having the confidence to lean into it without having any real clear answer. And I think you get better outcomes when you do that, because if you come in with just a copy paste from last year, there's no room for strategic opportunity or creativity or actually making things better.
This is interesting. We were talking, you know, I suddenly had the picture that it's a multivariant a multivariable equation, and I was thinking about, you know, when you said, well, we have to consider what we can do, how we can fund it, what are creative ways to do it, and I, you know, I've suddenly realized that, you know, you might not be able to do X, but you might have enough money to write a grant to do X. And then, but then if you don't get the grant, right, now you've wasted the money that didn't get the grant. And so it's a little bit of a, you know, of a roll the dice kind of situation. But it and it's, you know, should we put how much of our money do we put in the pot where we go out and, you know, and look for additional funding sources? How much do we just figure we're going to take on and do ourselves?
Well, I mean, one of the quick things I'll just say just briefly, because we don't have a ton of time, what came up at council was one of those strategic moves, and we proposed both at the Finance and Budget Committee earlier and then at council on Monday, hey, so we pay $1.7 million worth of debt service a year, and debt is a tool, in my opinion, to be used for certain purposes, and sometimes they're legitimate because you need to spread the intergenerational benefit or cost across more than just who's paying right now into the system. However, it could be abused. It could be overused as a tool, and it could really undercut our ability to do certain things. So we're looking at debt right now in a strategic play to pay down some of that debt a little bit in advance, and that creates a headroom for us to do real things. So those are the kinds of
Now,
strategic policy decisions that the council is weighing right now.
when you say headroom, it means that then frees up some money that you could subsequently borrow for something else, right? Is that?
Not even borrow, but if we pay it off, we actually don't have to pay in,
Oh, you
you know,
don't
if
have
we
to pay
went
an
this
interest.
way as blessed by council, there are loans, even though they're pretty low interest loans that we got a long time ago, you know, or bonds, we would not need to pay that interest over the next, you know, 3 or 4 years. And that would be the savings we could use now to do real things. So, you know, we could take an approach to our long-term financial picture, even in the short term, that kind of pairs together with a sustainable structure. And those are the kinds of, you know, gems we're trying to seek right now.
Yeah, I was, you know, there, you inherited some debt here.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course. Yeah, no, that's generous.
So
Yes, we have. Yep.
I'm just going to put it that way. And in my notes here, it does say that if the conversation lags, but we only have 2 more minutes, so I'm not going to ask about the Fort Worden PDA because that would take up the next half hour.
You could roll the tapes of the city council conversation. They came to give an annual report just on Monday.
I knew that, and actually, that's my plan. Is I'm going to go listen to that because they yes, and apparently he's going to be back, right?
That was the request. Yeah, we'll work that out.
Well, that's good. You know, I'm thinking that kind of makes it through my list. We got a couple more minutes. Anything you want to hit, or otherwise we can listen to some music. And then, as you recall, I'd like you to join me for, you know, the first little bit of Blues Journey, and we're gonna talk about the value of community radio. I hope.
That would be
So.
so. I hopefully I didn't undercut the argument in this half an hour, but I'm happy to shift gears and talk about why community radio is so darn important.
You want to? Shall we listen to some music first?
Taylor, you're so generous saying that I'm a co-host, but you have all the buttons.
I do, but I don't know what they all do. So,
Ah,